Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
It's time to visit with our friends from Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Dr. Michael Bauer joins us today, the medical director at Northwestern Medicine's Lake Forest Hospital. Dr. Bauer, welcome back. How are you?
I am doing well. Thanks very much for having me on. It's been a bit.
Yeah. Are all of the doctors at Northwestern as communicative, as warm, as friendly, as up and happy as you guys always sound on the radio?
We like to think so, but we're happy to fulfill this role for you.
I would say, though, I wonder if that's something they teach at medical school where they say, okay, you got to get the grades and figure out chemistry and biology, but remember, you are in a very forward-facing human experience here, so if you are not a positive person or naturally friendly, do they counsel medical students to hone that part of their personality?
It's all part of the teaching, John, although I think medical students and residents tend to gravitate to the fields where they feel they're going to fit best. So some are not as communicative as others. Sometimes we find them in the basement looking at our pathology slides. No slight to my pathology friends, but there is a joke that they're the ones that like to do that. And then you have those that have the gift of gab that tend to go into more patient-facing, people-related type fields.
Yeah. So maybe the pediatrician knows it when they go into med school that I'm going to be good around kids and families, right?
If you're going to be a pediatrician, you better like kids or you're in for a career of lots of headaches.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, let's talk about some of the stories that are in the news on the medical front. Up to 5.4 million in the U.S. already have had the flu this fall. Are you surprised by that story?
No, not at all. When you look at our averages, you know, we can have anywhere from 20 to 40 million cases of influenza a year, with up to about 500,000 hospitalizations. And unfortunately, typical year, anywhere between 20 to 40,000 deaths. So if you look at those numbers, that translates that we're somewhere between 10, maybe 20% of a typical flu season. So I think the take-home message there is we still got a long way to go with influenza, and I can't miss the opportunity to say it's not too late to get your vaccination.
I know so many people with a chest cough. I guess that's where a cough is, but they don't have a lot of other symptoms. They just seem to have this chronic cough now. I mean, for 4 or 5 weeks, and it doesn't really have that many other symptoms other than, you know, how debilitated you might feel if you're just coughing a lot at night. I don't know what that is. I don't know if that's novel this year. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I absolutely do, and there's lots of respiratory viruses circulating outside of influenza, or what we commonly call the flu. Most people with influenza, though, you know when you get it because it's kind of like getting hit with a lightning bolt. Yeah. One minute you're fine, yeah. The next you feel miserable, and usually you're going to have fevers for a couple days, headache, chills. But there's lots of other respiratory viruses like RSV, like mycoplasma, which is a bacterial type illness that cause these lingering, nagging, nuisance coughs, typically for about 3 to 6 weeks after the infection.
Are those then contagious, or is there that same window of contagiousness, you know, 5 days after the onset? I mean, what's the thought about that?
Yeah, there's nothing magic about 5 days, but there's no question that you're most contagious early on in the illness. So if you've had a nagging, lingering cough that beyond that first week of illness, most of the time you're not going to be very contagious at that point. It's just affecting you. what we do see, there's some recent studies with COVID, unfortunately, that show with the newer variants, they may actually tend to be contagious a little bit longer, even though it's a milder type variant than the initial ones we had. So the take-home message again, cover your coughs, cover your sneezes, wash your hands really well.
847 texted in, does the flu shot the doctor's talking about prevent you from getting the flu, or does it prevent a serious case of the flu? It keeps you from dying.
Yeah, both. In a typical influenza season, we know that there's a match because the vaccines need to be made well ahead of time, and we sort of have predictive logic to say these are going to be the circulating strains. So in a good year, we hit upwards of a 50 to 60% match, and it definitely can keep you from getting flu. We do know, though, that despite being vaccinated, you can get influenza, and in those cases, it typically is a milder case.
There's an interesting story, Doctor, on News Nation Now, newsnation.com, our sister news network website, and it's headlined this, Can Ozempic Curb Alcohol Cravings? Doctors report a possible link. Doctors are reporting some Ozempic users are finding the drug is lowering their alcohol cravings along with suppressing appetite, signaling a possible link between weight loss drug and curbing addiction. Do you think there's much promise there? What is your thought about that?
There is lots of anecdotal evidence that's coming out as these drugs get used more and more. We need to have good studies to look at seeing, can it have a role and impact in the addictive behaviors? A lot of that, John, really goes back to looking at what is Ozempic or semaglutide, that's sort of the generic for it. What is it? How does it act in the body? And we know that basically it's mimicking a hormone that gets released from your intestine when you eat. And where does it act? It acts up in the brain. Well, we also know that that hormone tends to reduce the brain's response to dopamine. And dopamine gets secreted at higher levels in addictive behaviors. So people have what's called dopamine-seeking behaviors, which can be looking for a drink, smoking, online shopping, betting, etc. And we know that that same active ingredient, that semaglutide, will decrease the brain's response to dopamine. So there is the hope and potential that by reducing the brain's response to this reward or motivation syndrome, that this drug may actually be able to help those with all kinds of addictive behaviors, not just alcohol, not just smoking.
Or food, for that matter, because our understanding is, right, Doctor, that if I'll take your answer to this after a quick break, but when people go off of Ozempic, they tend to put the weight back on. Their old behaviors resurface. I wonder if that would be true for alcoholics as well. But I also wonder when they say people are inclined to put the weight back on after Ozempic is no longer, they're no longer taking Ozempic. I hate to say this, but having lost the weight, if you don't eat as much, then you don't put the weight back on, right? It's not the absence of Ozempic. It is the increase in calories, if I'm following this correctly.
You know, John, you got me kind of depressed because you nailed that so well before your commercial break. As I alluded to, though, we really need to see more studies. The reason we know most people will start to put weight back on if they stop the Ozempic, it's because, again, look at what was it doing. It was making you feel full. It was suppressing your appetite. So it absolutely stands to reason when you go off it, your brain goes back to its kind of original set point, and most people will start to put that weight back on because they are taking in more calories. part of the goal when people are on Ozempic is also learning to modify their lifestyle behaviors, eat less, exercise more. So if they do end up going off the medicine, they can try and continue those same type of behaviors. We need more studies to see if the changes that occur in the brain while you're on them that help curb these addictive type behaviors will be long lasting, or if they'll end up reverting back to their original state. We just don't know yet.
But is it possible, like some medicines or antibiotics, that in fact over time the efficacy of that's going to wane, that even with Ozempic, I'll desire food, I'll desire alcohol? Is that what you're alluding to?
That's part of it, because again, we need these longer term studies. We have very good data now over the last year, year and a half, 2 years, but what's going to happen 5 years down the road and 10 years down the road? That's why we need to follow these things long term to get good scientific data.
One last note from 847, an area code. Our listener texted in, Dr. Bauer is as friendly on the air as he is in the office and out. He saved my nephew's life. He knew as soon as he saw him it was Kawasaki's disease, which is very hard to diagnose. Said one of our listeners, I know no more about this than that, doctor, but what a nice note. Thanks for doing what you do.
What a great way to end this session. So thank you very much.
Dr. Michael Bauer, the medical director of Northwestern Medicine's Lake Forest Hospital.